Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
There's a high fly ball
from KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado. There's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And the driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Now, Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, let's get it going on a Monday night. Kevin Wheeler with you, and happy to be with you here on KMOX. We got a lot of baseball this hour. We got football next hour, but it's not the on-the-field variety of football that we're going to be talking about. It's going to be Mike Florio's report in Pro Football Talk this weekend, or I should say on ProFootballTalk.com this weekend, that relates to the league, or at least some in NFL circles, that was the word he used, circles, could be floating the idea of an expansion team for St. Louis as a way to make the lawsuits go away. And obviously, that's a complicated issue. It's not really a simple, that would be great or that would be terrible. And Mike's got really, really good in-depth information on that. So I'm going to have that conversation with him at 7:15, and then we'll follow that with some more about the questions that go along with it. Like, okay, then who owns the team? And then who builds the stadium? And what guarantees can be made that this team won't be allowed to move at some point in the not-too-distant future? So obviously, there's a lot to get into on that topic. And obviously, one of those questions would be, does the city want to even support an NFL city or an NFL team? And I think, you know, initially there would be pushback, and I always know that there will be people that will be bitter. And I think rightfully so, by the way, no judgment in that, rightfully bitter about the NFL's handling of football in St. Louis over the years and never, ever return as NFL fans. But I do think a lot of others would be eventually won over. I don't know what it is. I kind of do know what it is. But fact is that the NFL always seems to win people over. I mean, if the NFL was a person, it would be a horrible person, like somebody you wouldn't want to know. But you'd always be fascinated by what they're doing. It's almost like some of the reality TV stars that drive me crazy. I'm sure they drive some of you crazy, too. The people that apparently don't have any talent in life other than just being known and famous. The NFL has a little of that vibe. And I admit, you know, I'm still a fan of NFL football. I can't stand the league, which is an interesting dilemma for me a lot because I love the sport. But I hate the people that are the stewards of the sport. I don't think they're good people. I don't think they care at all about their customers. And we're going to get into more of that with Mike Florio coming up about an hour from now. And look, Mike is one of the only national football reporters that even covers this story. I mean, the story gets coverage, but it's always from the news people or it's from people that cover, you know, sports law or whatever. But the people that actually cover the NFL, they don't touch this story. Maybe it's because in the middle of the season, it's off their beat, right? They're all about what's happening from, Sunday to Sunday, I guess you could say. But it is a shame that some of the bigger media outlets just haven't got. I mean, this is a massive case, and the NFL keeps losing. So we'll get to more of this coming up next hour. We got baseball this hour. So Joe Sheehan is going to join me, of course, the author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter. He'll join me at about 6:30. We'll talk some playoff baseball. We'll also talk a bit about what we learned from the Cardinals about the Cardinals in 2021 and how we can use that information to talk about 2022. And, you know, I think that'll be a fun conversation as we jump around on a number of different baseball topics. But, you know, one of the it's cliche by now, but one of the things that all of us that really love sports talk about on a regular basis is that one of the beauties of being a sports fan is that on any given day, any given game that you go to, you might see something that has never been seen before. Not only that you've never seen before, but that has never been seen before. And I'm not sure that the plays that we're going to talk about from this past weekend in the baseball playoffs really fall into that category completely. I know people have dug out some examples that are similar to these plays, but never in this kind of setting where everything becomes magnified. And you had and both of them happened over the weekend. Both of them happened yesterday. In the Boston-Tampa game, you had a ball bounce off the right field wall, bounce back and hit Hunter Renfro, and then go over the wall, and it's a ground rule double, which, by the way, is really the only ruling that it can be. It can't be anything else. It's not a home run. He can't go play the ball once the ball's laying in the bullpen. It's a dead ball there. So, yes, that call makes sense in and of itself, but what's interesting and what we're going to talk a bit about with Joe Sheehan later on is how there's no wiggle room allowed for umpires to kind of assign base runners where they should have been. I mean, on that pitch, Kevin Kiermaier was the hitter, and on that pitch, Yandy Diaz was running. It was a 3-2-2 out pitch. He's running on the pitch, and he's on second base by the time the ball hits the wall and then hits Renfro and goes over. But based on the rule, he can only get two bases from where he started, which means he's going to be on third base. He can't score. And obviously with the ground rule double, the batter just gets a double. I don't think anybody's disputing that part, but what people are frustrated by is not that the rule was enforced poorly. It wasn't. It was enforced exactly the way that it should have been based on how the rule is written. But I think there, you know, that it spurs a conversation, right? And that conversation with me is we understand what the rule is. And there's another case we're going to talk about in a minute that falls into this same category. And we know you can't go back and change it. But I do think that these plays raise an interesting question about what might need to be considered moving forward. Maybe it's as simple as allowing video to see where the runners were at the time the ball, let's say, hit the wall in the case of the Rays-Red Sox game, and determine pretty easily, like, okay, well, where should that guy be? And again, there's no 100% way to do this right. Somebody's going to be wrong. It's always going to be the people on the wrong side of the call. They're always going to be wrong, upset. That part is unavoidable. But can we get to common sense with the rules themselves? Because again, they were enforced correctly. There was nothing that the umpires did incorrectly in the Rays-Red Sox game, and there was nothing that the umpires did incorrectly in the White Sox-Astros game yesterday where, I mean, I'm trying to find another way to put this, but this is the only way I can think of to put it. That play with Yasmani Grandal coming out of the box as a left-handed batter, he's a switch hitter, but he was hitting left-handed for that at-bat, was the lamest non-interference I've ever seen. Like, how do you intentionally interfere with a throw but not qualify for an interference call? Well, the rule is written in a certain way. We're going to talk a bit about that, and of course we'll talk about these things with Joe Sheehan, plus regular baseball too, like who's going to win these series, who's going to end up in the World Series, all that, plus the Cardinals too. We'll talk to Joe Sheehan at 6:30. Coming up next, I want to talk more about that non-interference. Like, how do you intentionally get in the way of a throw, but it's not interference by the definition in the rule book? All right, we'll get to that next on KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to bring in Joe Sheehan, the author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter, talk a little bit about what's going on in the playoffs, a little bit more Cardinals coming out of 2021, the lessons learned in 2021, and how we can apply those to 2022. And, of course, we'll talk about some on-field World Series, well, World Series-related stuff. We're not there yet, but obviously which teams have the best opportunity to get there, although that could change a good bit tonight, depending on how some of the games, how these two games go. That we're going to be talking about tonight. So, for example, if the Red Sox win tonight, Tampa's done, and they're not a World Series contender anymore, and that game is just underway in Boston. A couple other things I wanted to get to, and one other thing, really, before I get to Joe Sheehan. And Joe and I'm going to ask Joe about a couple of these things when it comes to these rules enforcement. We talked about the Red Sox-Rays ground rule double thing yesterday. And again, just acknowledging up front, based on the rule book, the calls were made properly by the umpires. Not disputing that. Now, yesterday, you had a play where Yasmani Grandal, who's a switch hitter, is batting left-handed against Zach Greinke. There's a runner on third base, Luis Robert. And he hits like a one-hopper to first baseman Yuli Gurriel. And as Grandal's coming out of the batter's box, keep in mind, this is happening not as a right-handed batter that has to cross over home plate eventually to get into what we call the base path. And again, we'll get into some of the minutiae on that in a second. But it's a left-handed batter who is already on the foul side of the chalk line when he's in the batter's box, somehow ends up a foot and a half on the grass in the infield, and coincidentally, right in line with where Gurriel's throw needs to go to reach home plate. Total coincidence. No way that was intentional. Which, come on, guys. Come on. I don't know if you saw Grandal's comments after the game that he was like, you know, it's just a good base running move, and we'll just leave it at that. Like, what he did was take advantage of a poorly written rule, which, again, no problem with Yasmani Grandal. Not in my book. What he did is what a lot of players would do in that circumstance. You're trying to give your team an edge. You're trying to disrupt the throw. And what I'm saying is the rules of the game need to make a little more sense, because he clearly interfered with the throw. He was nowhere near what a normal path to first base would be for a left-handed batter. And when you watch the swing, as he's swinging, one of the reasons he rolled over the ball to first base is that he's flying open. So his momentum is moving him more toward foul territory rather than fair territory. We're not talking about an attempted bunt for a hit where you're leaning forward and maybe falling into the infield as it's happening, or maybe an outside pitch where you get fooled and you're falling off balance on the swing. I mean, this was a flying open rollover. So you're not going towards the infield. You're going the other way. Yet somehow, 10, 20 feet down the line, he's a foot and a half on the grass inside the baseline. And I don't understand how something so blatantly obvious and intentional. That was not an accident. I don't care what anybody says. I know the umpire, Tom Verducci, was on the broadcast last night. And he mentioned something about intent and they didn't see intent. Man, if you can't see intent there, you aren't paying attention or you don't know how this works. But I know the umpires do know how this works. But they saw an easy, you know, rule book definition. Well, you know, the batter can establish his own baseline. Well, good. Then guess what? Every batter from now on with a runner on third base and a ball hit to first base should just run right in the first baseman's way and just stand there. 5 feet inside the line. Doesn't matter because it doesn't. You can establish your own baseline. You can establish your own base. So what's to keep people from abusing that other than the fear of getting drilled by a throw? Now, maybe that's not a sacrifice that a lot of players would be willing to make for game 117 of 162. Well, clearly, Grandal was willing to make that sacrifice in a playoff game with his team down 2-0. And again, I got no problem with what Grandal did. He did what players do. In the moment, in the competitive moment, you try to find a way to help your team. But I just don't understand how intentionally interfering with a defensive play is by rule book definition not interference. It's clearly what the intent was there. And it worked. And yet the rules say, nope, not interference because he gets to establish something. That's nonsense, man. That's goofy. And again, I'm not saying fire anybody. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying let's maybe examine the rules that brought us to this place. Let's maybe examine, like, okay, maybe there is a tweak there. Like, if you're a left-handed batter, there should really not be any time where you're a foot and a half on the infield grass. Like, ever. Again, I listed a couple of rare exceptions. You should be able to use video to kind of look back at it and say, okay, if he was falling off balance or he was running out of the box like for a bunt hit, you know, kind of a push bunt down the third baseline, left-handers do that. That's a different thing. But with the swing that Grandal took, there was nothing natural about that path. He basically started out of the box running at the second base position and then stayed there long enough for the throw to hit him. Now, to me, there's only one other solution to this, and it's not a fun one, and it's probably not a good one. And that would be to instruct infielders to say, all right, if the guy's in your way, hit him in the face. Because then he won't do it anymore. That's what middle infielders are taught on double plays. If the guy's not going to slide, if he's not going to get out of your way, throw it right at his face. He'll get out of the way. I promise you that. And you'll see this sometimes on plays at every level of baseball, but in particular at the higher levels where they're really good at this stuff, where they can tell that a guy's coming in and he's not planning on going down early. He's going to try to disrupt the throw. And you'll see immediately that middle infielder starts to drop down and throw sidearm to let that batter, that runner know, okay, this is coming right at your face if you don't get out of the way. So that's the only counterbalance to this is to be violent, to potentially injure someone. Because if what else, what other choice do you have? You can't throw over him because you're going to throw it to the backstop. You don't have time to go around him. If you did, you would. And he's running at you anyway. And based on this whole, he can establish his own base path, he could just run in a Z shape the whole time. He could just run in, you know, like I mean, he could run in a snake pattern, just back and forth and get in your way. So again, rules were enforced properly. No scandal. But I do think these two things merit a discussion moving forward. We'll say, all right, listen, we have the power of video replay. If we can look at the video and see that the path taken by the batter in that scenario was an unnatural path towards first base, he's clearly doing that to interfere. He's clearly doing that with the purpose of disrupting the throw. Why is that any different than trying to bump a fielder when they're trying to catch a pop fly? Why is it any different than any other interference play? I mean, again, clearly it's called interference. And if you're going out of your way to interfere with the play, shouldn't that be interference? We'll get into that a little bit. We're going to start with that with Joe Sheehan and then obviously work to more on-field, like moving forward topics with the baseball playoffs and a little on the Cardinals heading into 2022 as well. We'll hit up Joe Sheehan when we come back next on KMOX.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo, if you've persevered through. You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Great to be with you tonight here on Sports Open Line. Happy to be talking baseball, as always, with Joe Sheehan. Of course, you'll find Joe on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. He is the author of the aptly named Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, which you can find at joesheehan.com. First of all, Joe, good evening. How you doing? You enjoying the playoffs so far?
Yeah, it looks like we're going to have some pretty deep series. I think the record is 19 games out of 20, and that's actually in danger this year.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, it depends a little bit on what happens with this game that's happening right now. But yeah, I'm enjoying that to a degree. And, you know, well, first of all, there's nothing worse than just like a quick series that ends in 2-3 days. And you're like, all right, let's wait another 6 days before the next series can start. Let's play it all out so we get more games.
Right. I think the players, you know, you want that break. It's higher at the end of the year. But baseball players, especially everyday players, don't like to have 5-6 days off.
No, I know I wouldn't, and I know they get the age-old debate, rest versus rust, is there, but give me rest. Give me rest. I don't think there's a whole lot of rust in just a few days. I got to say, Joe, right off the gate, I mean, I want to talk about the playoffs, and we'll get into the series and you know, how they're all going and stuff, but right out of the gate, I just want to say I cannot agree with your take more when it comes to the rules and enforcement in the games that we saw yesterday on two odd plays, the ground rule double in the Rays-Red Sox game, the interference play, or the what I'm calling the non-interference interference play in the White Sox-Astros game, that the rules are clearly called correctly based on the current rules, but those rules need examination because they don't really make any sense, especially the interference one to me made no sense.
Yeah, I think Yasmani Grandal got confused. He thought he was going to the mound to talk to his pitcher, and he got lost on the way. For me, it comes back to you, as you know, Kevin, I'm very much in favor of an automated ball strike system.
Yeah.
And what we have now is umpires basically just calling strikes and balls willy-nilly. We're basically saying, here's the rules on the books that define a strike, and umpires can go do whatever they want. We see this all game long. So if we're going to have the human element, if we're going to say umpires' judgment is valuable and we want them to make the calls, I think you also have to give them the power to override a situation, to protect the integrity of the game. Look, they got both calls right, but does anybody feel like they got both calls fair? You know, that ball that Kiermaier hit was an RBI double right up until the point Hunter Renfroe got his body in the way and it bounced weirdly over that midget fence in right field. And by the way, I don't want to hear the Red Sox complain about the C-ring in the dome anymore. Your right field fence is 18 inches high. Please don't tell me about gimmick ball.
That's a really good point.
And then, of course, like I say, the play with Grandal, which, again, that running lane only applies for plays on the batter runner. So if Grandal wants to wander out to the mound and get in the way of a throw, to me, that's interference. I understand it's not interference on the batter runner in a run home to first play, but it's a base runner getting in the way of the throw. And Tom Hallion said, well, he established his own baseline by how he went to first base. And I'm like, okay. I mean, how far are we going to take that idea? So again, If we're gonna put up with umpires calling pitches 3 inches outside strikes because that's what they're gonna do, then at least let's have human umpires look at a situation like the double to right, like Grandal running halfway to the mound and saying, no, the integrity of the game is protected by me making this call. Yandy Diaz, you score from first. Yasmani Grandal, you're out. The runner goes back to third. I don't like the situation we have right now where we have the umpires influencing the game behind the plate and then just hiding behind the rule book on other tough calls.
Yeah, I'm with you. And especially, you know, on the interference play there, I mean, like, so my takeaway from that is any batter that hits a tapper to first base with a runner on third should just run around in an S shape in front of the first baseman and just get in his way on purpose and wave your hands and stop and stand there because you've got your own path to first base.
You have to take a direct line. That's the one thing. But there's no.
But he didn't do that. He ran an arc. He was he's a left-handed batter, basically coming out of the box in foul territory. And like you said, he looked like he was going to the mound.
Right. And if you're a right-handed batter, you've got even a lot more leeway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The direct line from the right-hand batter's box, especially at the end of a swing, is going to take you into the infield grass.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think that this is something you can game as a batter. Like the play in the outfield, look, nobody's saying Hunter Renfroe knocked the ball over the fence.
Right.
I mean, that's not intentional. And it's very hard to do that in any park that doesn't have, you know, just a little ruler at the bottom of the field representing the fence. But any hitter with a runner on third and less than two outs now, in that situation, absolutely. You want to stay as much between the first baseman and the catcher on that play as you can. I don't think there's any question that that's going to be an exploitable rule going forward.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I hope not. But, yeah, I think you're right. And look, I give Grandal a tip of the cap. I mean, not that it's necessarily brilliant, but, I mean, what's your job in that moment? It's to play as close to the edge as you can to help your team. And it's up to the guys in blue. They're not really in blue. But it's up to the umpires to officiate it properly. Again, which they did by the rules, but I don't think by the spirit of the game.
They're not in blue and black anymore. They're the guys in the crypto ads.
That's a good point. Good point. Joe Sheehan is with us from the Joe Sheehan newsletter. You'll find him on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. And, of course, on his own website, joesheehan.com. As for the series, Joe, anything standing out to you? I think we've had some pretty compelling games. I've been really interested by some of the, I don't want to say weirdness, but certainly some of the chaos of the White Sox-Astros series so far.
Yeah, the Astros offense has probably been make a case for the pitching in the Braves-Brewers series, but the Astros offense has been incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
They knocked out the White Sox starters in a total of 9 innings over 3 starts, getting 12 runs off them, just bludgeoning them. I thought the White Sox were going to win that series, and they still might, but I was really surprised by how much damage the Astros have done against Lynn, Giolito, and Cease, who have all were, you know, above-average pitchers this season. We'll see what they do tomorrow against Carlos Rodon. But, yeah, that's been great. And you mentioned the chaos. It feels like the American League playoffs have been chaotic these wild Astros-White Sox games and these really weird umpire calls. And the NL has just been the Braves and Brewers scoring 9 runs in 3 games total. The Giants-Dodgers series, you know, really haven't been competitive. I mean, the Giants got a 2-run homer in the first inning the other night. Logan Webb threw a shutout. And the other game was competitive for 5 innings, and the Dodgers broke it open. Cody Bellinger, who was last seen on the side of a milk carton, hit a rocket to left center to basically break that game open. That's a huge thing, especially without Muncy. If Bellinger – he was the worst hitter in baseball from the end of June when he came off the disabled list until the end of the year. Literally the worst hitter in baseball. So if he gets back to being even what he was last year or 3 years ago, they don't need MVP Bellinger, but they need a guy to do something. So that was a huge hit for the Dodgers. So, you know, we'll see how that series continues. The series continues in a couple hours here. But I think it's been fun because there's been this variety, right?
Yep.
You had the blowouts. You've had these crazy White Sox games. You had Brewers Braves, which is like baseball out of the 1960s. 2-1, 3-0, 3-0. The Brewers just completely no-showing with runners on base. They're 0-16 with runners in scoring position. The sabermetric term for that is bad.
Yeah, I mean, they've been struggling on offense for 2 months. Like, that part's not new.
They're not a particularly good hitting team. I mean, Christian Yelich is, you know, on that same path as Bellinger. He was the best player in baseball for 1 year.
Yep.
From, like, July of – maybe you can call it 8 months. From July of 18 through when he hurt his knee in 19, and he hasn't been the same player since. And they don't have a second guy anymore. I mean, Roddy Tellez had a big hit the other night. Willy Adames, you know, hit for them. Lorenzo Cain. But it's really – they don't have that big, hairy – even the Braves, who aren't scoring a ton of runs themselves, they've got Freeman in the middle of the lineup. And they have 8 guys who were basically 20 homer hitters this year.
Yeah.
You know, Darno hit 7 in like 200 at plate appearances. That's basically a 20 homer guy. All the trades they made at the deadline, it made them a one-dimensional offense, but it's a really good dimension to have.
Yeah, and really they had to make the most out of what was available without giving up too much asset, right? I mean, you know, you're not going to replace, you know, Ronald Acuña. You're not going to replace as easily, you know, Marcell Ozuna, but you did go out and replace a lot of their home runs and some of the depth because you gave yourself some platoon options there too. I mean, look what Jock Peterson's doing largely off the bench here.
Right, they were using Guillermo Heredia and Adrianza.
Yeah.
It was a really rough time for them in the middle of the season. And, you know, to go out and get average players, that's perfectly fine. And again, they have enough pitching in the starting rotation. They have enough of a starting rotation. I think they can get away with it. The bullpen's been good. And that surprised me a little bit. I don't really trust that bullpen with Matzek and Jackson and Smith. but it's worked so far.
No doubt. Has anything changed with regard to your thoughts on who ends up in the World Series?
Yeah, I'm stubborn, so I'm going to say Dodgers Rays until I can't say Dodgers Rays anymore. I mean, in March, I said Dodgers over Rays in six.
Okay.
So I'm sticking with that. It's still, I mean, we'll see what happens with the Rays tonight. The Dodgers, even though the Giants won the division, if you look at everything other than, like, the record, the Dodgers were about 3 to 4 games better than the Giants over the course of the season. And the Rays, I gotta say something. I'm shocked by what the Red Sox have done here the last couple of days. What is it? 20 runs in the last 18 innings of that series. Excuse me, I have a steak that's apparently done. I just can't say enough of the offense that they produce. And if that continues tonight, I mean, this is the thing 3 years ago. I mean, I don't think the Red Sox in the regular season 3 years ago when they won were very strong. And even going into the playoffs, you looked at the Astros, looked at the Yankees, and say, yeah, I'm not sure they're the team. This looks like it could be a lot like that, where they just get into the playoffs, the bullpen pitches a lot better than expected, and they steal some series.
Joe, quick segue into the Cardinals here. I mean, they obviously finished strong in September, got themselves into the one-game wild card. But clearly a team that, if you had said before the year that they'd win 90 games, I think a lot of us would have been like, all right, that sounds pretty good. But it was not quite as simple and smooth as that, but certainly we learned a lot from them. Do you think there's anything that teams like them that really struggled with depth, that really had a hard time filling in when guys either struggled or got hurt, can learn from what we saw the Giants do last offseason or the way that Tampa puts together a roster? Because I really think that, you know, these teams that seem to be the best, and the Dodgers too, seem to be the ones that have the most options when things go wrong.
Right. There's this talent that teams are expressing now, which is to take a player who isn't doing a whole lot, change him, make him better, and now you have a fairly inexpensive player who's a league average or better player. Now, you know, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Rays, and now we're seeing maybe the Giants be the next team in that line, and that's really the coin of the realm now. I mean, you look at – you can sign for all the free – I mean, teams want to spend money. I'm not saying the Dodgers or Yankees don't spend money.
Of course they do,
but
yeah.
The key is to have that core of 8 to 9 guys who might be making $12 million between them and producing 20 to 25 wins. And that's what enables you to go out and pay, if you're the Cardinals, you know, Nolan Arenado.
Right, right.
What's interesting is that the Cardinals used to be that organization. Not so much going outside the organization and making guys better, but it felt like for a long time that the Cardinals were very good at generating 1 to 2 win players out of their system to fill out the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And the bench for this team this year was horrible. I mean, it was a horrible bench. By the end of the year, you know, Sosa started to hit a little bit. Yes, he took DeJong's job. You look at Lars Nootbaar coming up. Hey, fight on, Trojans. I mean, they were better by the end of the year, but the bench was an issue. Now, like I say, you can go into the market and spend not a lot of money now because of the way the market is to sign better bench players. But the real key is to have you guys become the organization that gets the waiver wire, the minor league free agent, and finds the two-win player out of that. You look at the Dodgers with Muncy and Taylor and Justin Turner. The Yankees making the Gallegos to Voit trade and turning Voit into a better player than was expected. It's just that's the skill now. The Rays literally basically going to like a Wegmans and picking out strangers who are shopping for vegetables and turning them into like fireballing relievers.
No,
this is
the
biggest change in baseball since I've been doing this, Kevin. It's just the ability to turn players into something they weren't. Players would always improve, but now it's just a fundamental part of the game.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier done because of the technology available. I mean, you can make the point and you can show that person, here, you do this thing differently by starting at this point rather than this point, and you can get a certain result. But I also think, and we'll close on this, Joe, and this is not being stolen from the NFL by any means, but I mean, what I see a lot of these teams doing is only asking players to do what they're good at. And I think the Rays are very famous for that. That's a Bill Belichick thing in New England, right? One of the reasons they always get more out of guys that are cast offs from other places is because they're going to say, here's what you're good at, and that's all we're going to ask you. And you look at Tampa, the story of Andrew Kittredge. I heard him interviewed earlier in the season, and he said, yeah, in the minors, I always had a good slider. And when I got to the big leagues, they're like, yeah, you know what? Just throw that a lot more. Just throw it all the time, and you're going to have success. And all of a sudden, here's a guy being asked to do the one thing that he's really good at more often.
There's an acceptance of the disposability of players.
Oh, yeah.
That was the case back in the middle of this last century. And, you know, we kind of got away from that a little bit and started valuing guys a little more. Now teams like the Rays will just say, hey, we're going to use you for the 3 cheap years you have. You're going to give us 150 innings, and then we're going to move on to the next guy because we're confident we can find the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
But also, too, it's how the rosters are built now, particularly with pitchers. We've reduced the definition of a pitcher to, as you say, just go out and throw a slider 60% of the time. And you just didn't see that limited role. Like, it's weird to me that we call Ronald Acuna Jr., who does everything, and Andrew Kittredge, who just, or a better example, Austin Adams, who just goes out and throws sliders 85% of the time.
Right.
Like, they're both baseball players.
Right.
But Austin Adams literally has one skill. And it just, that's one of the things, the specialization of these guys. And, you know, it used to be you'd have nine pitchers on your staff and they all had to do a bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have 13. And this is the guy who does this, and this is the guy who does this, and this is the guy who does this. This is where I think the league kind of needs to step in at some point and say, no, you can only have 11 pitchers on your roster. We need to find some balance back in the game. So I don't think it's good from a league standpoint. Obviously, the Rays, it's not the Rays' job to make baseball look pretty.
Right.
It's the Rays' job to win the World Series. And this is where I think the league needs to step in and say, hey, look, we need to put in some restrictions so that baseball players have to be baseball players.
Well, they did that with the left-handed specialists, right? But they did that in the under the guise of speeding things up or condensing the action or whatever euphemism they want to use for shortening the games to have fewer pitching changes.
What have you? Let me ask you, Kevin, what have you done with the extra 45 seconds a night that saved?
Nothing.
How have you made yourself a better person?
I sent a tweet. That's it. It's an extra tweet every night.
That's what we all do. That's how we all waste our time now.
Yeah, that's it. I'm 100% with you, man. And that's something I would love to see kind of maybe hammered out as part of the CBA. But I know that'll all be about money and won't be about any of this other stuff that affects the game that we see on the field. Joe, love talking ball with you, man. Appreciate it every time you've got time for us. I want to make sure people remember to go check out joesheehan.com, sign up for the newsletter. You're going to be getting great information that you're not going to get anywhere else. And obviously, Joe, kind enough to share a little bit of that with us here on the show. You'll find Joe on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. Appreciate you, man. You enjoy the games tonight. We'll try to catch up with you again somewhere down the road.
Thanks, Kevin. Take care.
You got it. Joe Sheehan, again, the Joe Sheehan baseball newsletter. It's always easy to introduce someone who's, you know, like where they write for, what they work for is just their own. You don't have to go through and like, oh, you know, he's on KMLX and SiriusXM and all that. He's Joe Sheehan newsletter. Does a really good job. Don't always agree. We do agree on a lot of these types of things, though. And I want to follow up on what we were talking about there about that idea of disposable players. And it's not so much players. It's pitchers. And I understand where it's going. I understand why it happens, because it works, especially in the postseason. But it's also kind of unfair to those professionals, isn't it? We'll talk about that next year on KMLX.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown! Kansas City!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, a little more baseball. We're going to shift to football-related conversation. I say football, but really it's more football-related material coming up next hour related to the lawsuit. City, county, everybody else against Kroenke in the NFL. The other owners, Jerry Jones, you know, Clark Hunt, all those guys. We'll get to that coming up after the 7 o'clock news, and I'm going to have Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com at 7:15, because he had the story this weekend about people in the league starting to kick around the idea of maybe dangling an expansion franchise to the city of St. Louis as a means of a settlement regarding this lawsuit, because I think they obviously know that they're in big trouble right now. And, you know, whether they're in trouble of actually losing or not might not be their biggest concern, which is weird to say, but I'll explain what I mean by that coming up after the 7 o'clock news. I wanted to follow up just for a couple minutes on that last part of the conversation I just had with Joe Sheehan, and that idea that for a lot of these teams, we're talking about essentially disposable relief pitchers, right? Not necessarily everybody else, but, you know, relief pitchers live a difficult life in general, right? I mean, you know, you can see, we saw with the Cardinals how tough it can be on a guy like Alex Reyes, for example, you know, working that many times when you've never done it before. And, you know, one of the trends in baseball is to just keep throwing arms at things and just like, all right, and if you're going regularly, and a lot of these teams do go regularly to their bullpen in the second, third, fourth inning, or, you know, like even in the playoffs now, teams are going bullpen start, right? The Padres did it to the Cardinals last year. The Rays do it. And the difference here is that, like, the Padres did it by necessity last year, right? They did it because the starting pitchers that they had counted on in the rotation were injured. So they didn't have the people that they wanted. You look at the Rays, they're basically doing this stuff on purpose, like bullpen games on the regular. And I've never really loved the idea of the opener. I've never loved the idea of bullpen games on a regular basis, even though I can see what the attraction is. And you maximize matchups, and you probably give yourself a better chance to win the game that way. But I do think you do damage long-term. Like, every time you go with an opener, you're using a pitcher that you might not otherwise even need to use that day, and you're using them right out of the gate. I get the argument in favor of it, right? You can, let's say you've got a reliever that matches up great with their top three or four hitters, and you want to get off to a good start. So you do that, you get past those top three or four, and now we'll go to our, quote, innings guy, who's going to go two times through the order, ideally give you four innings, maybe five, but probably more like three, and then you're going to mix and match after that. Well, that's going to have a toll, or take a toll. That's going to, there are going to be physical bills to be paid for that. Because relief pitchers have worked more and more and more and more over the years. And even with all the great stuff, and even with all the things we understand now about pitch crafting and getting the most out of guys, you're still seeing people get hurt a lot, and you're still seeing relief pitcher performance vary greatly from year to year. And look, maybe this is the smart business approach. Hey, listen, relievers are always kind of funky anyway. You know, they get hurt. They, you know, their performance can vary greatly from one year to the next, even without overwork. So maybe it's best to treat them all as disposable products. But we are still talking about grown people with careers. You know, I mean, like, if you're a player on one of those teams, I would assume you're looking to get the hell out of there, even if the team is good, because if you're thinking about your own career, you'd like to have some longevity. You'd like to be around a little bit. I know winning is a big deal, and you want to do both. But I wonder if that's going to end up shifting back in another direction at some point here in the not-too-distant future. All right, it's going to wrap up baseball talk for this hour. We got NFL stuff and Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com coming up after the 7 o'clock news.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.